Make yourselves comfortable.
That's right. Pull up a chair.
What's going on, sports fans, and welcome back to another episode of Insights from the Locker Room. I am your host, Derek Bone Crusher Dennis, back in the building. Hope you got a chance to listen to the first two episodes of Insights from the Locker Room. We had two great guests. We had my boy Charleston Hughes of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and Alex Singleton, Philadelphia Eagles linebacker. Come on and talk that talk with us, give you that locker room chat, talk about some guys that they like to play against. Alex, for one, you know, spent 3 years in the CFL, did some wonderful things in a short time frame. So he, spilled it out there about the guys he liked to go against, especially other Canadians. Alex is a Canadian technically by passport. And he talked about other Canadian players he liked to play against. Charleston gave us a nice little breakdown of some of the old lines that he liked to go against. Some of the guys who I like to call barbecue chicken matchups. Guys who, you know, every time you face them, you're going to destroy them. So Alex and Charleston did a wonderful job giving us some examples of guys like that. I talked about a truncated season for the CFL, you know, with COVID-19. As previously stated in other episodes, 2020 has been a crazy year for all of us. A long year, tumultuous year. A lot of us don't really know what's going on, especially in the sports world. We are pretty much handicapped right now, or at least for the most part. I was down here playing in the XFL. XFL got cut short due to COVID-19. Didn't get a chance to finish the season. I was kind of looking forward to that. It was pretty fun. I was only around for about 3 weeks, a month, but I enjoyed myself. CFL, which would have been started up around now, has had to postpone pretty much everything. And I'm not talking about possibly starting to September, but all the news dropping is seeming pretty bleak, man. Seeming like CFL may not have a season of 2020, but I'm still holding out hope for the guys, not just myself. I mean, currently I'm a free agent, as I keep stating, but it's not about me. It's about the guys I play with, the guys I work with, the guys that I like to call my brothers, man. I hope they get a chance to play football, even if it doesn't mean no football for me. That's the type of guy I am. But back on the topics, another topic that I've been talking about the last two episodes is the hot topic in the world right now after the death of George Floyd, the death of Breonna Taylor, the death of countless other African-American people at the hands of police. It's been a hot topic, and the biggest topic, I think, is racism. I think now with everything that's been going on, racism has been such a prevalent theme in what's been talked about throughout media the last couple weeks, whether it's been positive or negative. You haven't heard much about COVID-19 numbers. That was always dominating the headlines. But now this is what the hot topic is. So in this episode, I'm pretty much going to talk about racism in sports. Been trying to do a little research just to figure out the history of it. Most of this is going to be my opinion, my experiences with racism in sports, and my opinion of, you know, kind of what happened. To be honest, racism is something that's like, how do I put this? Racism in sports is like I'm trying to find a great analogy to put it so that you understand, but it's pretty much like the components of water. You know, you need hydrogen, you need oxygen, and you need double the hydrogen of the oxygen to make water. Well, that's pretty much what I equate racism to sports is. It's like hydrogen to water. It's pretty much been a part of sports forever. Like, if you think about it, this dating back to the start of sports in general, when sports first started, especially professional sports, it was always an all-white dominated thing. You know, like, blacks were not allowed to play with white people. It was always like a separate thing, even to the point where blacks even had to create their own leagues. You had the Negro Baseball League because blacks weren't allowed to play in the major leagues. You had, I think there was an African-American league, if I'm not mistaken, before the NBA became such a big thing. Why you got, you know, stars before you heard the likes of like a Wilt Chamberlain or Bill Russell. You had George Mikan. Now let's be real. If you've ever seen George Mikan's stats and how George Mikan played, if they were allowed to let black people play before, would we know who George Mikan was? Let's be real. Probably not, in my humble opinion. But that's just the reality of it. Just reading a lot of stuff and just talking about racism in sports, it's pretty much like, and it's not just, you know, an American thing. I know I have a lot of Canadian fans. I have fans from other parts of the world who listen to this. Racism in sports is not just an American thing. Yes, I gave you examples of, you know, things that happen in America, and it's tons of examples. If you've ever seen the movie Glory Road and what the UTEP basketball team had to go through when they first started getting Negro, as they like to put it, Negro players to start playing with, you know, the Kentuckys who were all white dominated, the Indianas who were all white dominated, dominating college sports, and they were all white teams. No one wanted to see black people play in sports. And I think that in itself kind of brought about what we know today as fans heckling. I mean, if you think about it, when fans talk derogatory to players, it's always like a race baited thing. I mean, you're seeing it in the news today with the you know, NASCAR banning the Confederate flag, and seeing how angry NASCAR fans are that a black driver, probably, I don't know if there's other ones, but I think he's the only black driver in NASCAR wanting to, you know, kind of show his support for the movement, being that he is a black man in the sport, and people being so outraged that he painted his car with Black Lives Matter. You know, people, the first thing racist people love to say about sports is sports and politics don't mix. Yet, when you win a championship, where do you go? You go to the White House. Probably the biggest political thing that happened in sports, aside from visiting the White House, was when Jesse Owens won in the 1936 Olympics, when Adolf Hitler was running through Germany and the rest of Europe with the master race ideology. And, you know, what was that, World War II? One, if I'm not mistaken? I didn't pay attention in U.S. history. They wouldn't talk about nothing I was interested in. But, yeah, that was probably the biggest political thing that happened, because you had, you know, Adolf running around here telling the world that white people were the master race. They were superior people. They were the fastest, the strongest, the fittingest, the smartest, the everything. They were pure white was the way to go. And then you had a black man come into the Olympics and destroy everyone like it was nothing. Yeah, that was probably some of the biggest political stuff that happened in sports. So when people say, oh, politics and sports don't mesh, politics and sports pretty much have always been meshing for the end of time. Same way with racism. I think sports has always been a microcosm of what the world has been. If you pay attention to the stuff that happens on a sporting field, the way players interact with each other from different races, the way the fans talk to players, the way they treat players, it's always been a microcosm of the world. I mean, for as being a black professional athlete, man, I've always felt like, you know, people who weren't of my race only appreciated me because of the things that I could do. I was put on a pedestal because I was such a superior athlete, as opposed to, you know, I could do things that no one else could do. But it was like when you stepped off that field, you were just another black person in the world. You wearing that jersey, the jersey became like a cape. That's, in a sense, that's the crazy thing. That's what racism in sports to me is, that for young black kids, we've always been taught to make it out the ghetto, you had to be good at some type of sport. You know what I'm saying? Like one of my friends who's a rapper, he made a song. You either hoop or you rap. That's the only way you was going to make it out. Because in any other way, you was going to be stuck. It was a black hole being from the ghetto, man. Well, at least what they call the ghetto, or the hood. You know what I'm saying? It was a black hole being from there, because if you didn't have a wicked jump shot, or, you know, you couldn't, you know, put words together so eloquently that people enjoyed it to the backdrop of some music, it was kind of hard to make a lot of money and get it out of your situation. You know, a lot of people that I know grew up with, especially athletes, when the sports thing didn't work out, they resorted to, you know, the environment, what was around us, an environment, resorted to selling drugs, resorted to, you know, criminal activities, because that was the only way people knew how to get money. You know, you wasn't going to get a corporate job if you didn't get a chance to go to college. And even in that fact, when you go to college and get a degree, you're still not guaranteed to get a great job. Especially if, you know, you're paying to go to school, because you're putting yourself in the hole in debt to even, you know, even get that piece of paper that, you know, most of the time, you know, they say the majority of people the majors you get, you don't end up working in that field anyway. You end up doing something else. It's just the fact that you put on that paper, I got a college education. Some reason, that's important to people. Not the fact that you can be good at the job, but that you know the job, or that you studied pretty much your whole life at the job. All that matters is where you got that piece of paper from, what institution, you know, like, who do you know, who can vouch for you? You know, that's the way of the world. It's the crazy part. But that's another tangent I'm getting off topic. But again, back to the original topic, racism in sports. That's just how it is, man. My whole life, I've always, you know, sports have always been an outlet for me in terms of how to let out my aggression, how to let out my anger through day-to-day situations, through day-to-day things that I went through. I think for me, as a kid growing up, I don't think when you're playing sports and you're you know, quote-unquote bubble in your little circle, you don't really pay attention to the thing, especially for me. I'm from New York City, so you know, you don't really pay attention to a lot of the things that's going on around you. I think as you get older and you start to move up the ladder and get to bigger realms and bigger arenas in terms of, you know, playing sports and stuff, you start to really see what it is. I think the aha moment for me was when I got to college and I got a chance to see what, you know, playing in the NCAA and playing at a major institution and playing for a quote unquote big time college program was like. And it was reminiscent of, like, I mean, I don't want to come off crazy, but it was just reminiscent of, like, slavery. I don't know what slavery was like. I've never been through it. I can only go off of what I read through history or what I, you know, little information that I got through history of what I heard it was like. But that's kind of what it felt. It felt like the New Age slavery. It was like I had a, you know, white guy who was on the hierarchy who was responsible for me to tell me when to go to sleep, when I had to wake up, when I had to eat, when I had to be at certain places. And I had to stick to the schedule for years. And anytime I deviated from the schedule, it was always an issue. And not just in the sense, but what I'm talking about, like, just the underlying issue was, like, I remember, you know, just coaches giving us lessons, like trying to tell us, you know, the fact that you're coaching a team with a lot of black kids from, some from bad situations, some from not so bad situations. But it was always like all the black kids got grouped into one thing. Like, it wasn't like a special situation. Like, oh, you come from, you know, you got two parents at home, so I'm going to talk to you a little different. No, it was like if you was a black kid, you was getting talked to the same. It was like, I remember my college coaches always, like, trying to make a point of saying that they was trying to teach us how to be men. But the thing that always threw me off was, you know, I feel like that's not the case when it came to, like, the white players. When the white players' parents would come around, it was always, you know, the words that you would hear about their parents, or the words that you would hear about the interactions with those parents, it was always, like, synonymous with, oh yeah, he's got a great background. He comes from a great background. He has great upbringing. He's got a solid foundation. He has a great, you know, father in his life who can teach him the rights and the wrongs and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, they never talk to the white kids like, oh, I'm trying to give you a foundation to be successful in society. It only felt like it was for the black kids. The ones who came from single parent home, the ones who came from, you know, dad being in jail or dad, you know, doing this. I, for one, didn't really fall in that circumstance. I had two parents. Both my parents raised me, lived together, still married to this day. I didn't really come from too bad of an upbringing. But I always got this underlying feeling of when I did things or how I interacted. It was always like a whatever your parents taught you was wrong type of thing. And we're here to correct it, to make you a productive member of society type of thing. And I always felt some type of way about that because I had a dad. You know, if I had a male figure to that, if I needed to talk to him about something, I could go talk to him. And my dad, I remember, you know, stuff from my dad growing up. My dad always made a point to give me books to read about, you know, myself and my history. You know, before I got to college, I was one of the few black kids in college who knew about Mesopotamia. You know what I'm saying? The origins of civilization and the where it came from in the Mediterranean area, and just thinking about, you know, reading certain things in the Bible and realizing, you know, what they said about Jesus, you know, stuff. And it like stuff like that. My dad used to give me books to just read. I remember one time giving me a book, 1001 Things That You Never Knew About Black People Throughout History. And the book was like such an eye opener because it was like in school, you learn about Ben Franklin and how he discovered electricity. What they don't tell you is the instruments that he was using to discover electricity was built by a black man. Washington, D.C., the capital of the U.S. What you don't know is a black man was the architect of Washington, D.C. The man who drew up the plans for that entire area was a black man. The traffic light was created by a black man. The filament, the little thing inside a light bulb, little that you know what I'm saying? You always thought Thomas Edison discovered, light, you know what I'm saying? Created the light bulb. No, the thing inside of the light bulb that he was able to use to create it was created by a black man. That was just stuff that you didn't learn in school. Like, you know, you never learned about Black Wall Street. You never learned about, you know, flourishing, thriving black communities that were, you know, popular. You never learned about, you know, all the colonizers who went to Egypt and or African continents where the greatest civilizations were, where they had gold, they had education, they had colleges, they had universities before they even were discovered in Europe. You know, with people, those were all things that came from Africa and the black man that was stolen from them and brought to other places and made it seem like, oh, well, you know, you guys are doing it, but we know how to do it better. You know, didn't attribute it to where it came from. That was stuff that I used to learn as a kid from my dad. So as I got older and I got to college and I was around, you know what I'm saying? It was the black coaches we had, they were, you know, position coaches and they didn't really have too much say. Because, you know, they were trying to keep their job. They were trying to keep their income. They were trying to be able to take care of their family. So they wasn't doing too much. I remember I got in trouble for telling one of my offensive line coaches, it was a black guy. I remember calling him Uncle Tom. Because when I would sit in the room and talk with him, he would say one thing. But then as soon as he would get in front of the coaches, you know, the head coach, white, and, you know, the assistant head coach, white. And as soon as they would raise their voice in this, he would start stuttering and start shucking and jiving. And it used to upset me. But I was the kid who would call people out on it. And I would get in trouble for it. I've always threw him out my sports career and my playing career, I was always that guy that people had, oh yeah, he's a nice kid, but he's not this. Oh yeah, he's this, but he's not this. I've always got the but, and it's always because I felt like I've always had, you know, it's kind of what I'm doing now with this platform and what I've been doing with my Twitter throughout years. I've always spoken up. You know, my parents have always taught me to be very vocal, not be scared to speak up, not be scared to say the things that I wanted to say. And, you know, I never really cared about what people thought, what came out of my mouth, because I know if I'm going to say something, it has to be, you know, you got to be articulate, got to be educated, because white people don't respect it if it comes out your mouth, if it's not articulate and it's not educated, it's coming from a black man. There's evidence you see every day, you know, especially with, like I said before, with these NASCAR fans and stuff, spewing hatred and saying ignorant stuff and uneducated things, but no one facts checks them. But if it was me saying stuff like that, people would be all over it. People would be ready to tell me I was wrong. People would tell me I was ignorant, tell me I didn't know nothing, tell me I was stupid, tell me I was this, tell me I was that. It's the way of the world. So like I said, racism in sports has always been a microcosm of what the world is. Just more experiences that I've had. Even when I got to the NFL, I thought I was dealing with certain things that were pretty racist. I mean, if you look at sports in general and you look at how, you know, I guess for an example, take the draft. The draft we just had, the virtual draft. If you think about all the black athletes that were drafted and the storylines for them, was always negative things. Oh, he overcame his father, someone doing drugs, and he, you know, this one had, you know, died. The brother got killed, gang violence, you know what I'm saying? But he found a way to pull himself up and become a draft pick. You don't never hear stuff like that about the white players. Why? Why don't you talk about, you know, Billy, who came from Backwood Country Trailer Park? You know what I'm saying? You don't say stuff like that. They find positives about them. Oh, well, in high school, he did this, this, and that. He was an All-American. Why you don't talk about Billy's dad beating up on his mom when he was living in the trailer park? Why don't you never hear about that? You only hear about it from the black kid's perspective. And that's, like, again, microcosm. When you, you know, things like, you know, perfect example. No, let me not go there. I'm not going to go there. I don't want to. That's probably getting a little too deep for y'all. But yeah, like I said, that is just like, you know, and this crazy thing, it's not just, again, like I said before, it's not just in the States. Racism in sports is in the world. I mean, the biggest sport in the world has probably some of the biggest racist interactions known to man, and that's soccer. Black soccer players get the worst out of anybody. I mean, if you could just go back and just kind of read stuff, like, it was actually a story on ESPN back in February that just talked about the global incidence of racism in sports and how it's still prevalent, but it's decreasing. Oh, we don't have as many incidents. Why are there incidents at all? I mean, like I said before, you hear the way fans talk to players. It's always racially driven. I mean, I've had people call me the N-word on field from fans. Even from players. I've had people say negative things about me, you know, playing in certain areas in certain towns. That's like a lot of athletes deal with it. Remember Russell Westbrook and what he got, you know, playing in Utah. I mean, if you've ever been to Utah, I'm not surprised that Utah is a racially driven place. I mean, if you've ever been to Utah and you've seen the people in Utah and the environment in Utah, you would probably understand that. That was a big thing, and how he and the storylines is all about how Russell reacted to the fan. It wasn't about, you know what I'm saying, what the fan said to him. You think about guys like Myles Garrett and what he went through in the NFL, him getting suspended, him swinging the helmet at that quarterback, and him saying the reason why I swung the helmet is because he called me the N-word. And, you know, the guy trying to go, oh, no, I didn't say anything. I would never do that. But you got to think about it. Have you ever seen Myles Garrett do anything like that? Again, being a black athlete in this world, we are held to such a high standard. It's like almost unfathomable. We have to be damn near perfect for people to want to like us. You know what I'm saying? Think about Tiger Woods. People love Tiger Woods until you found out he was, you know what I'm saying, doing anything that any other man with that type of status and power, you know what I'm saying, probably would have been going through. When people found out what Tiger Woods was doing, they hated him. They berated him. Tiger Woods, for the longest, too, was trying to deny his black side. He wanted people to not look at him as a black man because he knew how people would treat him or talk to him or things he would go through if you viewed him as a black man. So for the longest, he was, you know what I'm saying, that slave mentality, you know what I'm saying? He's denying a part of himself because he doesn't want to be associated with it because there's a negative connotation to it. Why does negative always has to be tied to being black? That's the crazy part. Like, why is it something negative always black? And think about it. If anything, when you think about good versus bad, white and black, yin and yang, you know what I'm saying? You think about Halloween and the horror and the negative connotations of Halloween, but the color is black. You know what I'm saying? But when you think about the good stuff, the color is always white. Why is that? I'm probably getting a little too deep for y'all, but that's just the reality of it. That's just the reality of the world we live in. But man, I could go on probably for an hour talking about this topic, but I just wanted to do, you know what I'm saying, something quick, 30-minute show, just to put it out there. I want to create conversation. I want to create dialogue. So if you're listening to this episode, please hit me up. Let's talk about it. Let's. That's the beautiful thing about what's going on right now in the world is that it's creating dialogue that normally wouldn't happen. And I think that's the only positive I'm taking from everything that's going on. I hate what's going on right now. Does it infuriate me to open my phone every day and see all the negative stuff going on and knowing that, again, like I said, I have a young black child. I'm going to have to teach him certain ways to maneuver and move in the world so that people don't treat him a certain way. Yeah, you know, just because he may be, you know, he may look a certain way, I know for a fact how people are going to treat him because he is, quote unquote, at the end of the day, he's a black kid. So I have to, you know, teach him how to move in the world. But again, like I said, all the stuff that's going on in the world right now, we gotta talk about it. Do you have a little bit of a platform and not talk about it? I feel like, you know what I'm saying, it's like they say, if you're silent about it, you're fueling the problem. You're not trying to fix it. So again, I'm doing this episode because I want to create dialogue. I want people to listen to it and give me feedback. Let's talk. Let's keep the movement going, man. I've done a couple of, you know, interviews where people have been asking me about if I've dealt with racism in Canada, or you know, the topic of racism, or the topic of, you know, what's going on in the world right now. And I feel like it needs to be talked about. And it needs to be talked about every day. Like, hopefully it doesn't die down. Hopefully it's not just a occurrence for the moment and it's not going to continue. But it needs to continue to be talked about. People need to figure out how we can become better people in the world, at life. It's not just about, you know, certain, or, you know what I'm saying? It's not just, like I said before, a lot of people are trying to make it seem like this is just about police brutality. That's the issue. That's the thing we need to fix. No, it's not just police brutality. It is racism as a whole and in general, how it's so entrenched into life itself that people don't realize it's a part of everything. It's not just the police, how they deal with black people. It's about being a black man and trying to make it in the corporate world. It's about being a black man and trying to be, you know, make it in the sports world, or how you're viewed, or your image. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, black athletes are held to a high standard, and normally we're compared to our white counterparts because those are the guys that you feel like, you know, like, like I said, my time in the NFL, that was always something that I always heard, especially when I was with one team. The coach, the O-line coach, was an old white guy. And every day, he always told me to be like the one white lineman on the team that was the poster child, the one that everybody looked up to. He told me I needed to aspire to be like him. I should try to be more like him. And in my head, I always thought, why do I have to be like him for you to have trust in me or like me to do what I can do? And that's play the game of football. What does it matter what I look like? What does it matter what I dress like? What does it matter how I carry myself? What does it matter how I talk? What does it matter how I walk? That has to do with me playing the game of football. That's all stuff that has nothing to do with that. That's separate. But why is it that my image has to be what you want it to be in order for you to feel comfortable with me? That's racism in sports to me. That's something, that's being black in America. That's being black in the world, is that you have to conduct yourself a certain way. You have to talk a certain way for people to want to feel comfortable around you. And I don't get that. I don't agree with it. And I've never been that way. For me, like I said, I've always been that guy who just, I'm unapologetically black. If you don't like me for who I am, it's not my problem. It's your problem. I don't need to be a certain way for you to like me. I don't need to talk to you a certain way for you to like me. You show me respect, I'll show you respect. You don't show me respect, why do I have to respect you? Because of what position you have? Who you think you are? Who you think you know? I have to, you know, move a certain way. And like I said, move a certain way and do certain things for you to want to put your name behind me? I know I'm a good person. I know how to talk. I know how to conduct myself. I know how to do things. Yeah, we're all human. Humans make mistakes. No one's perfect. But again, for me being a black man, why do I have to be a certain way for you to want to put your name behind me? For you to want to work with me? For you to want to conduct business with me? I have to dress a certain way. I have to talk a certain way. My hair has to be cut a certain way. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the reality of being black. And it's not just in sports, it's in the world. But again, this is a sports talk show, so I'm trying to keep it sports related. But that's going to be my rant for this episode. I'm not going to hold you guys going again. I hope you guys enjoy the content. Get a chance to listen to episode 1 and episode 2 if you haven't. And if you listen to this episode, just give me, you know, I want to have dialogue. So hit me up. Hit me up on Twitter. Hit me up on, you know, Instagram. Hit me up on Facebook. I don't really care where you hit me up. Just hit me up. Let's talk. Let's have some dialogue. Let's keep the conversation going. Let's keep creating, you know, the conversations that need to be had so that we are productive and we move forward. Because that is literally the first step that needs to be done right now. It's not going to be a drastic change. I know that. I'm probably never going to see a change. This is probably life is going to be for me. I'm hoping I can see a change for life of my son, but who knows? It's probably not going to happen either. But this is something, you know what I'm saying? We need to start taking steps in the right direction. So, again, thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys enjoy. Again, if you like what you hear, if there's something you want to add, if something you want to talk about, please don't hesitate to hit me up. On Twitter, Six Bone Crusher 3, on Instagram, Six Bone Crusher 4, or hit me up on the show's stuff for Insights from the Locker Room, Insights from the LR on Twitter, Insights from, you know, LR on Instagram. And yeah, that's it for me. So, in the great words of my brother Russell Westbrook, I'm out.